Are you here? Hey, are you here?
Hey, are you here?
Well, I'll take silence as acquiescence and go with a yes, and assume that you probably are here indeed, watching the Paul Leslie Hour, not to be overly assumptive. We're going to take you today to a 16,000-acre tract called Hobcaw. Hobcaw Barony, a beautiful place of great historical and ecological significance just off the coast of South Carolina, or just on the coast of South Carolina. We're presenting our interview today with Mr. Richard Camlin, Hobcaw Barony's Director of Education. Nice guy, too. Hey, you can be extra nice as well. If you subscribe to the Paul Leslie Hour on YouTube and Facebook and like, comment, follow, subscribe, only takes a second and it really helps a lot. Assuming that you will, we thank you. And now, let's hear from Palmetto State native Richard Camlin. Watch!
Well, Richard Camlin, we're here at Hobcaw Barony. Not every porch is quite as scenic as this.
No, it's not. But in the low country, you can find a lot like it.
Yeah, it's very, very beautiful. So, Richard, it's not every day you even see a word like Hobcaw or Barony, let alone together. But tell us a little bit about the history of this land. And it's incredibly majestic, as you can see from the back.
So Hobcaw is a Native American word. We have Native American sites all over the property. It means between the waters. To my right, we have Winyaw Bay. We have the river. Off to my left, about 6 miles away, we have the ocean. So Hobcaw is a peninsula that is literally between the waters. And we also, with Barony, it was a King's Grant, an English grant. In simplest definition, it's 12,000 acres of land granted to the lords for priors to make profit from crown.
So, Richard, I want to find out a little bit about you. You're a native South Carolinian?
Yes, native Georgetown.
So tell me a little bit about your family and your roots.
My grandfather's family came from Williamsburg County, but my father grew up in Georgetown. My mother grew up in North Carolina, but they restored a pre-revolutionary house in Georgetown, which we still have today. And so, you know, I grew up and the tour train would ride by and I'd be 5 years old on the front steps. I'd say, "I'll come on in." And my mom was always so grateful that nobody ever took me up on that.
Well, we don't hear that word, as I said, barren. What exactly does that mean?
It's it just an English land grant, 12,000 acres. There were 8 lords proprietors and they were granted a barony. And your title sort of said how many baronies you had. I think it's Landgrave had 4. I think Cacique had 2. And I might not be right on this one, but I think if your title was baron, you had 1.
So tell me about the first time you became familiar with these lands.
I always knew about it growing up. But my fifth grade teacher used to bring students out here, but she didn't start until the year after my class graduated. So my first trip out here was for my interview with Bellbrook's last partner, Ellis Severin. And I spent the entire day touring the property, eating lunch, hearing great stories. Planted all the way through. It's got a little evergreen, but you can still kind of see a little bit every now and then.
There's so much. I've had the pleasure of doing a little tour here, but there's so much to see. From you could look at these lands from a historical standpoint, wildlife, the natural environment here. What would you say your favorite part of Hopkaw is?
The quietness. But in terms of location, North Inlet, the salt marsh is just is so beautiful. The undeveloped beach that we have. So if it's boat season, that's my favorite. If it's winter, Belfield, where Belberg had her home, because it's just the setting is so serene and peaceful there. And beautiful.
Yeah, certainly beautiful. How many total buildings on the entire property that you say there are?
We have 37 historic structures on the property. Two main houses that belong to the Baruchs. We have five superintendents' houses that were built by the Baruchs. We have four slave villages that have multiple buildings in some cases. And then there are a few other structures that we have as well.
What is the oldest building that's found here?
1840. Three of the slave cabins that we have in Friendfield Village date to 1840.
With all of the different things that people can see here, I mean, just in terms of the tour, I saw horse stables, I saw the homes of these enslaved people. I've seen, you showed me what used to be an airstrip, right?
Right.
When somebody comes here, how do you begin? I mean, there's so much stuff.
There really is. We have an introductory film that sort of sums up what they're going to see, but we like to do things chronologically. So as we're driving through the gate, we start with indigenous peoples, with the Native Americans, and we cover indigo and naval stores, and it transitions right into rice, and then we talk about the enslaved people, and then we kind of turn it into the Baruch era, because Bernard Baruch bought this in 1905 and 1907, and it transitioned from him to his daughter and then to the foundation that owns it today. So we just kind of go full circle and chronologically.
Tell us about the Baruch family.
He was from South Carolina. He was born in Camden, and his mother was from Winsboro. Her parents were wealthy cotton planters, but they lost everything during the war. And she wanted her four boys to get a good education. And she encouraged her husband, who was a physician, never had a large amount of money to speak of, but was a physician, that she wanted her boys to get an education. So they moved north, New York City, when Bernard Baruch was 10 years old at the time. He graduated from the City College of New York, and his mother then started calling her husband's wealthy patients and said, my son needs a job. Can you help him? And a stockbroker took her up. And he became an errand boy. He made $3 a week. And by the time he was 25, he was a partner in a different brokerage firm. And by the time he was 30, he was a millionaire several times over. He went to his father and he said, I've done it. I'm a millionaire. And his father said, well, that's nice, but until you've used your resources to help other people, what good is it doing you? And being that they were Jewish, he was trying to plant the seed for him to give back a little, which he did his entire life.
In terms of what brings people here to Hopkaw, I'm sure it's a lot of different reasons, but what would you say the number one reason people come here?
That's a hard one. My first inclination is to say because Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill are known to have been visitors here. So I think there is some element there that brings people in. But then we have Belle Baruch, who is just this kick-ass woman who just took on the world. And I think when people hear just a little snippet of her story, I think that brings them here. Then we have people that are scientists and they hear that we do research and they want to know about the research. And there's just so many things. It's hard to sum it up into one. But the thing about Hopkaw, though, is once somebody's introduced to it, they're called. They just love it.
Well, tell us about some of the research that's going on here.
One of the ones we're really excited about is the naming of the enslaved. We just don't know much about any of the enslaved people from the property. The group from the Belbrook Institute for South Carolina Studies, which is Coastal Carolina and Francis Marion University. They have, in just over a year, just under a year, I guess, they've discovered 715 names. So we're really excited about that. Belbrook specifically left the property to be used for research in marine biology, wildlife biology, and forestry. So the salt marsh side of the property and the forest, for that matter, they've both been studied on this property for over five decades. And because of the longevity, trends have been established. Salt marsh retreat, sea level rise. The scientists have been able to see things as they're changing. A lot of people that do research come to Hobcall or look to Hobcall as a baseline for the research they're doing elsewhere.
So, Richard, tell me about how you ended up in this kind of work. Is this something that you ever pictured?
Not at all. No. When I got out of college, I came back home to Georgetown. I was working in town, and some friends that I knew that worked out here asked me if I wanted to come talk to them about a job, just to do tours. It wasn't really high on my list, but I thought, well, I'll come see it. So I came out, and as soon as the gate opened, I fell in love. And then Ella Severn, who was Bell's last partner, interviewed me, and she became like a grandmother to me. I loved her. So I've just stayed on 27 years later.
So no more, your ideas of being a lawyer.
Long gone. Long gone. I'm so much happier doing this.
You know a lot about the history here, and you know, you mentioned a couple of names already of people very, very known throughout history. Winston Churchill, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Tell us about some of the other people who have set foot on this land.
You know, it's kind of interesting. If you looked at the guest books through the years, in the beginning, it's more of your banker and Wall Street type people. It graduated into writers and politicians. And Mr. Brook had this deal where he would, you know, if he backed you as a politician, you were pretty much guaranteed to win. He would give you a check to cover your campaign costs, and he would invite you to Hobcall. And then he'd tell you his ideas. He expected you to go back wherever you just got elected and put his ideas into play. And then kind of show business people. But just to throw out some names, I typically say a who's who of the 20th century, but Jack London, H.G. Wells, Irving Berlin, Omar Bradley, General Marshall, Paderewski, Hedda Hopper, Kitty Carlisle. My cousins who grew up on the property remember Tex and Jinx coming out to the property. They remember Helen Keller coming to the property. So a broad range of people. Mr. Brook knew everybody. And then Bell knew a lot of people too, but Bell was more of a close-knit friend type person.
Irving Berlin.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He was a somewhat frequent visitor here. We can't say that he played the piano in the house because it was at Bell's house, not this house. But it'd be nice to be able to say that, but can't do it.
Well, people can't see from this angle, but it's quite an impressive house. Tell us about this house.
This one was built in 1930 and 31. There was a house here prior that caught fire a little bit after Christmas of 1929. Mr. Brook was going to close up shop, and that was it. But his friends, who loved coming here, decided that they needed to pressure him because they knew the fun would be over. They wouldn't be coming here anymore. And they convinced him, and he decided to build a house out of concrete, brick, and steel. It's 13,500 square feet, and it has 9 master bedrooms. 7 servants' bedrooms, but 9 master bedrooms. And it was always full. Mr. Brook loved to have people around him, loved to entertain.
Interesting stuff. So tell us, Richard, are you a music fan?
Love it. Don't play it. Don't physically play it, but I love playing it and hearing it, yes.
Tell us about your musical interests.
I like a little bit of everything, but I always gravitate towards Jimmy Buffett, Bob Marley, jazz music every now and then. Lately, my sister's got me on this Frank Sinatra kick, so a broad range of everything.
You're a man of fine taste.
Every now and then.
Well, tell us, you know, we got connected through the world of Jimmy Buffett, and it's always interesting when that happens. Tell us a little bit about your Buffett story.
So I went to high school in Georgetown, and one of my friends happened to be Jimmy Buffett's nephew, step-nephew, really. And he came in one day and he said, you know, he said, Jimmy Buffett's my uncle, and we're having a family reunion in Charleston. You want to go? We're going to go to a concert, too. I was like, yeah. And at the time, I thought Jimmy had this song called Dance to the Left, Dance to the Right. That's about as much as I knew about him. And I accepted, and we got to go down and meet him in Charleston and fly on the plane to Atlanta and hang out backstage. And it was a great experience.
You have a favorite Buffett song?
That's hard to narrow down. That really is hard to narrow down. I think, and it changes from time to time too. It's always a little bit different, but we used to go to St. Thomas a lot.
Yeah.
And the last time we went, Barometer Soup came out, and my sister and I drove downtown just so we could get the album. The album had just come out that day. And on the way back, just following my wake, that was playing. And just so every time I hear any song from that album, it makes me think of that last trip. So I like those songs a lot, but I do like all, pretty much like all of them.
Barometer Soup's a great album, but I was sure you were going to say The Prince of Tides.
Did not come to mind, but had it come to mind, I would have probably said that. That is one of my favorite songs. I love hearing him play that whenever he was here. It was great. And my mother, my godmother went to school with Pat Conroy. And so my mother got to meet him. And then I actually got to meet him, and we got to talk about it a little bit. But that is a great song.
Well, what was Pat Conroy like?
It's a long story, but when I told him who I was, he was doing a book signing for hundreds of people. But when I told him who I was, he stood up and he shook my hand, and my godmother was murdered. And so he knew all about that. He just said that was such a tragic story. And so when he signed my book, he said, great love. I don't know if he does that for everybody or not, but just great. You know, it was a very brief encounter, but it was great to finally get to meet him.
You told me a story about when you got to host, or whatever you want to call it, be as a guide for a very interesting party of people.
Yes, Jimmy's wife, she called me a few years ago. She was coming down with some of her friends for her birthday. And her brother called me, said, can we work something out? And then Jane called me, and I planned their trip, and I got to show them a little taste of the Low Country, which Jane was all too familiar with, but the people that she brought were from California, a couple of actresses and editors and things like that. And so I got to show them a little bit of what we have here.
It's pretty irresistible when people come to the Low Country for the first time.
It really is. It is. It's just such a different place from everywhere else.
Well, one of the ways that I knew that we would get along, especially, was you had a food recommendation. And you can't see my gut so much from this camera, but let me assure you, there's one there.
Yes.
Tell us about this very, very, very cool place.
Friends of mine that I grew up with in Georgetown opened a place in Allendale called Seaway Outpost. It's kind of like a modern general store. Yeah. Anything you want, they're probably going to have it. You can go in there and get boiled peanuts. You can get a sandwich. You can get a fried chicken sandwich. But the best thing they have going is their country ham biscuits. Every time you go by in the morning, you got to stop there and get one.
It was one of the best biscuits that I've had.
I told you it could change your life.
Yeah, it was great. But full disclosure, was it singular?
You learned right the first time.
There were two.
They're so good.
Yeah, very good. What about other restaurants? If somebody is coming out to Hobcaw, what other places do you recommend that they go visit?
There are a lot of really good ones around here. In Pawleys Island, my three favorite are Frank's, Chai Blossom, and Bistro 217. If you go to Georgetown, Between the Antlers has a really nice view. I was just at the River Room last night. And then the New George Hotel has a restaurant called The Independent that's named after the Independent Seafood Market that closed down after, I think, 80 years. It's very upscale, but it's a neat experience, too.
Speaking of neat experiences, it seems like you've had a lot of them, and your day-to-day is an interesting experience. Richard, what is the best way to live life?
live it to the fullest. Every day, get up and do something you want to do because time's running out. You got to make sure you make the best of every day. For me, I love coming to work. You know, there's some days I want to stay in the bed a little bit longer, but I don't mind getting up, coming to work. And see, you got to do what you love. That makes the biggest difference in the world. My father was a physician. He loved every minute of it. But when he would come out here, he said, this is the only place where people can't find me. And it just gives you a way to sort of recharge.
What is the best thing about being Richard Kim?
I don't know that there is the best thing other than I get to enjoy this beautiful place where I work. I get to enjoy the beautiful town where I also live and just the people that we know, that I know. It's just great.
The website for Hopcaw is?
HopcawBarony.org.
HopcawBarony.org. I always like to end my interviews. It's very, very open-ended. You could really go anywhere. It could be related to Hopcaw. It could be related to something else. But for anyone who's tuned in with us, what would you say to them?
If anything of what we've said is of any interest, they need to come here, number one. But if you can't come here, you need to read about it. There are two books. One is called Plantation Between the Waters by Lee Brockington that has 150 of our historic photographs in. You can see more of them in our archives online. But the biography of Belle Baruch is called Baroness of Hopcaw. It will really give you a taste of what this is all about. It doesn't mention Ella Severn a whole lot, which I do regret that because I loved her. She had so many great stories, and she's also very responsible for this being here. But it's a great read, and if anybody is interested in a strong woman, a beautiful property, they need to read about her.
One more question. Who is Richard Campbell? How would you define yourself?
I would say I'm a pretty simple person. People that know me, they know that I'm a true individual. Hmm. They know my background. I don't really discuss that a whole lot, but I just try to be the best person I can. And, you know, my dad, I kind of got that from him. He was a very humble person, and he knew hundreds of people at the hospital, and he always knew their name. I'm terrible at that. So I try to be the nicest person I can to make up for the lack of remembering someone's name.
Well, it's been a great pleasure.
Same here.
This is one of the absolute nicest porches I've ever had the pleasure to sit on. And I've sat on some nice porches.
You'll have to come back and do it again, and I'll take you to my other porch in town, and you can see that one too.
Okay. Sounds good.
Appreciate it.
Until next time.
We thank you and appreciate you dropping in for the Paul Leslie Hour today. You know, you can help the Paul Leslie Hour in our mission to provide independent media content like this by visiting www.thepaulleslie.com/support. We truly thank you. This is your announcer speaking. Performance of the Entertainer intro song and Corina Corina outro song, courtesy of John Primorano. Well, that's it for today. So until next time, be safe and be good.